Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
I had a lot of jobs, odd jobs as a teenager and as a tween. But one of the jobs I had as a teenager was as an ice cream shop boy at Carvel. I always really loved Carvel. And now I had like free access to its product. And I would really take advantage of it. I would eat dinner there. I had like several helpings of ice cream. I would make my own concoctions, like mixing up the almonds with the, you know, the stuff that hardened, the dipping stuff that hardened. I would I would pour that
the
in.
Dip.
The dip. Yeah. I forget what I guess we called it.
And you
dip.
Never felt bad for not paying for any of it?
No. Wow. I never did. I didn't
a
make much money.
Sociopath.
Sociopath. No. I didn't eat that much.
You're
that
sweating.
they're fine. But I did get my comeuppance because I developed lactose intolerance because I ate so much of it. And so I guess I did pay for it in the end.
And I guess I'm paying for it now too because your lactose intolerance has a direct impact on my nose.
Because we're often around each other. And for our lactose intolerant listeners.
So thanks, Carvel. Justin farts.
Farm when I have dairy.
Anyway, here's the show.
Enjoy. Speaking of farts.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom. You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your farty host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
And with me, as always, is my...
Fartless?
Yes, occasionally farty.
Of course. That was a good hookup, though, that Carvel.
Ugh.
I didn't take advantage of it because it was before I could drive, so I had no way of getting there. I think I saw you there
13.
Once or twice. I dated a girl who worked at Baskin-Robbins when I was a tween, and I took full advantage of that hookup. I got a lot of free ice cream.
Oh, yeah, I know, but it was... I don't know why this all seems like sexual to me now. What? And she would just hook you up with different...
Yeah, that was also back in the day where you could have ice cream or any sweets completely guilt-free.
Yeah. Ugh. God, I wish I...
It didn't even... I remember... I mean, now, obviously... Not obviously, but now, whenever I have any sort of sweet, there's at least a moment, usually more than one moment, where I think... This is not healthy.
Doesn't that suck?
It sucks. But back then, I never crossed my mind.
Never.
I mean, it did if I ate too much and I like my stomach hurt or something. I'd be like, oh, I guess that wasn't good for me.
Yeah, I made.
But I never thought about the calories or anything.
No, it was just the immediate. Like, yeah, you're right. If you made yourself nauseous, and I'm not exaggerating by how much ice cream I would eat. I had it's all I ate. We would have like 8 hour shifts.
That's disgusting. And those were the days.
Oh God, so fun. Well, why are we talking about excessively eating ice cream?
Because our guest today used to excessively eat ice cream until he quit.
It's one of his favorite things. It's he talks about it today. You'll hear him wax poetic about how much he loves ice cream. And by the way, there's no better ice cream than Carvel. Please be a sponsor. They're the best.
They are really good.
I don't
know if they're the best.
Oh, really?
You know, I've had better ice cream.
Yeah, maybe. But like, as far as like popular chains go?
Yes.
What's
better? Yes, for sure.
Creamy and delicious. Anyway, speaking of creamy and delicious.
Please don't look at me when you say that next time. Creamy, delicious.
I'm conflating pleasurable taste now with sexual appetite. Anyway, speaking of doing that, our guest today is Jeff Garland. You know him maybe not necessarily as an ice cream lover, though you're about to. You probably mostly know him from my favorite show, Curb Your Enthusiasm.
And my favorite show, The Goldbergs.
Right.
I'm just kidding. No, he's on The Goldbergs. I'm not kidding about that.
He does talk about that and the difference between doing The Goldbergs and Curb, which to us is somewhat...
It's a pretty large chasm.
Yeah, they're very different shows. Very popular show. Equally popular, I would
he
say.
He is our second...
Goldbergs may be more popular.
Oh, I bet it is.
Yeah.
He is our second guest from Curb Your Enthusiasm that we've had. Our first guest being J.B. Smoove. And we are slowly chipping away at eventually getting to Larry David.
Oh, God. The... what do they call that? Mecca? The prize... What's the prize on the gold...
The Holy Grail? Fleece?
Holy Grail. Yeah. Holy Grail of podcast guests. He's actually also our third, I think, guest that's affiliated with the Goldbergs. Kevin Smith and Leah Thompson both have directed episodes of the Goldbergs.
Whoa, crazy.
But we should We should also mention that he has a really funny, really great stand-up special on Netflix called
Jeff Garlin, Our Man in Chicago.
And he was just such a... I've known him for a while. I don't want to get into it, but...
Why not? Well, this is where you're supposed to get into it.
No, but... well, I'm going to get into it in the interview.
Oh, right.
Right? Don't we kind of...
Well...
Maybe not. Maybe
you met him doing a movie called Strange Wilderness, just for some context. That's where you met him. But you didn't get to know him too well, right? Am I wrong? Stop me if I'm wrong.
No, you're right. So I'm not...
But you enjoyed his company, and you enjoyed working with him.
I really
did. But you didn't develop much of a friendship.
No, because he only worked, I think, a day on that. He worked with Oliver Hudson and maybe he worked 2 days, Harry Hamlin. Anyway, if you know the movie's not very well known, but Strange Wilderness, but it's a stoner comedy from Adam Sandler's company, Happy Madison. And I loved doing that movie so much. We improvised most of it, and it was just this really fun, dumb stoner movie. Anyway, that's where I met Jeff. I was a huge fan of his going in, so and meeting him, hanging out with him did not disappoint. So we kind of catch up about that a little bit, but you're right. I didn't know him that well.
You guys talk about a story in the interview that he tells in his stand-up special, but just for some context, we should briefly tell the story just so it makes sense in the interview.
Yeah, that's true. That's because we allude to it in the interview, and then he doesn't want to tell it.
Right, because he wants people to see the special, understandably.
Sense. Yeah.
However, we're going to tell you really quickly what it is. So the story is he is driving his car in a parking lot, and he basically, long story short, this person steals his parking spot.
It's such
And then she goes on to make fun of him for being overweight.
Yeah.
She makes a gesture indicating that he's overweight, and he flies into a fit of anger, and he gets out of his car just to talk to her, just to, because he's so curious what type of person would do such a thing. So he goes over to her car, knocks on her window, and I guess he knocks on his window too hard, and it shatters her window, and she panics, and then she, thinks that he's attacking her, and he immediately backs up. He's like, "No, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry.
And he goes into the store, he apologizes, and when he comes out, the cops are there. She's called the cops.
So he gets arrested. So that is the story they're referring to.
And now, Jeff, if you're listening to this, I'm so sorry for telling it, because I know you want people to, but for those listening, it's such a good story.
Because he tells it in a great way.
Much better way than we're telling it. We're just giving you the bullet points, but it's such a... Watch this special. It's great. And that story is at the center of it. And that story is the springboard for a lot of things that happen in Jeff's life that we're also going to get into. So here we go. Getting into it right now. My chat, my convo. What's a good word to say?
Not convo.
No, I know. My conversation.
My conversation.
Yeah. What am I dancing? Why am I trying to be cute?
I don't know.
My chit-chat.
You're thinking back to your ice cream days.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, here's Jeff Garlin. Bum, 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 bum. Here's Jeff Garlin. Bum, 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 bum,
bum, bum, bum, bum.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes... Mm-hmm. This ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better... It does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hello, hello again, shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
You scared the hell out of me.
Sorry.
Squeezing you. I'm a big hugger, and I adore you, so I'm like, fuck.
Oh, no, it felt good, actually.
Yeah, good, all right.
I haven't had a nice, big, man hug in a while.
That's me.
It's nice. Yeah. When's the last...
I'll tell you the last time I saw you. I swear to God.
Uh-huh.
I bumped into you and your girlfriend at the movies in Century City.
That's yes.
The last time I saw you.
Yes.
Yep.
And this is how horrible my memory is, or how many failed relationships I've had. I forget who the girl was.
Drew.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
by the
so
way,
funny.
I'm divorced now, and that's all life is about is piling up.
Yeah.
Like, how is
carcasses.
This possible?
You think, like, I spent all this time. I mean,
right.
You must experience it tenfold with a. You were married for so long.
Yeah, 25 years, yeah. But I'm. We have children, together,
yeah.
And I aspire to keep my close with her.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even talk about her in my stand-up.
Oh, that's good. Well, by the way, I should have prefaced by saying anything we say here, you cut out, you can tell.
Oh, I'm all comfortable. I'm all good.
Okay.
Rarely. I mean, every once in a while, I'm like, oh, I wish we hadn't discussed that.
But then just tell me.
But it's usually not personal stuff. It's just me having an opinion on something in the world that I really don't give a shit about.
You don't, because you talk about that in the stand-up a little bit, having said something. Oh, having said something on the Goldbergs.
Yeah, my vagina hurts. Yeah.
And somebody complained to HR.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, no. I mean,
it's just so stupid. And that was my attitude in HR. Was like,
yeah,
call anyone, tell anyone, fire me. I'd love to be fired with Jeff Cohen who got fired for his vagina.
It'd be a great headline.
It would be, but it would also put expose
the absurdity of it.
Right, yeah, because look, I think Me Too has to have happened. And I think for me as a man, common sense of being respectful, thoughtful, and kind, I don't get in those areas.
Yeah. I like trying to unpack why something was offensive. Like in this case, why would somebody be offended by that? Like you said in the stand-up, clearly I don't have a vagina.
Right.
It's obviously like a...
I don't know. But sometimes, you know, you don't know. You don't know their history. I once offended someone who I found out had a real tragic history by I forget what it was. It was someone I knew very well, and I hugged her. And then she was upset about it. I didn't know.
You hugged her too long?
No, God, no. I don't do that.
No.
It's a big hug and release. But it was someone that I was friends with, someone I really thought. And then when we discussed it later, it was totally cool. Like, she told me her uncomfortable feelings and stuff. It was all clear.
Isn't that great?
I wouldn't do it.
I just wish we could do that with everyone on Twitter. I wish there was a...
But it's not.
That
Twitter is a place for people who aren't funny and don't have a sense of humor to express themselves. I'm not involved in Twitter. I don't read Twitter.
I've stopped,
I closed my account a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And Twitter had helped me set it up. I went to Twitter in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
I was all in on the Twitter
world.
Now I just do Instagram because at least you have to put a picture up. And I block anyone who says something. It's always funny.
Uh-huh.
The people who say the worst things, which are rare on Instagram. So I go to see what their page is about.
Yeah.
Always private.
Yes.
And guess what? They either have no posts, which is usual.
Yeah.
Four posts, like not many posts and not many followers.
Yeah.
So it's all about, you know, I don't understand.
Well, I got into a thing over the, about last weekend with a woman. I was in Fort Lauderdale at a film festival and I had been, I got a little shanghaied into this party, which I think may be an offensive term now to be shanghaied. I don't know.
But stop worrying about
shit. Okay.
You didn't mean it. You weren't thinking of that.
I was.
Although I've never used, I know that term. Well, years ago on Curb, I improvised Indian give, that Larry, your Indian give. And Larry goes, you know, that's a racist term.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, I guess it is, isn't it? But what is it?
Says the guy who wrote the episode of the Cigar Store Indian.
Yeah, I know. But the thing that's weird about it is also when you think about it, I never knew growing up about Indians giving something in the
No, I didn't
back.
Either. We did that to them.
Well, but maybe that's where the term comes
maybe.
From.
Maybe. So it should Indian be pejorative giving. For like white colonial assholes.
Yeah, white colonial, exactly. So I didn't quite realize, but go ahead.
Well, Shanghai I know well because when I was a kid, we loved Laurel and Hardy, and there's a great Laurel and Hardy short where they get knocked on the head and they wake up on a boat and they're in indentured servitude. But I was at some function, whatever. They gave me an award, but they appeal to actors' egos, but really want them to take pictures and show up at things.
Right, yes, that's what it is.
So I was at one of these things and I was feeling, I made the mistake of smoking a little weed, so I was a little like paranoid. We did not think it was going to be like this situation with the photos and stuff.
So we had just finished taking all these things, photos, and sat down. We ordered. I was so excited to eat. I was in a little corner, and a woman walked up and said, and I'm mildly paraphrasing, but this is basically what she said. She said, "Hi, I need you to, I need you to meet my people. Get up and meet my people." And she kind of gestured over to the other side of the restaurant, crowded restaurant. And I said, "Oh," and I'm not exaggerating. I said, "Oh, wait." Yeah. She goes, "Yeah, come on, come on. It won't take long. They're over there." And I said, "What people?" She goes, "My friends, my people. They recognize you and they want to meet you." And I said, "Oh, you know what? I'm about to eat dinner. Is it okay if I do it right after, as soon as I'm done with dinner?" She said, "It'll only take a second." And I said, "Oof." And I'm so bad at drawing boundaries. I was really proud of myself for saying, "Oof," you know, and I'm a people pleaser. I want people to like me. And normally I probably would have gotten up and like gone through the crowd. And there was something about the way she was doing it. It was so rude. And right. and she said, "It'll only take a second." I said, "I'm sorry. I'll do it as soon as I'm done with dinner." And she rolled her eyes and she said, "Okay." And walked back to her friends, and I got so paranoid. Oh no, she's upset. And I looked back, and sure enough, she was talking about me. I could see her gesturing to me, and I make a thing to the friends. I'm just gonna eat. I'm just gonna eat really quick, and I'll be right over. And I ended up at the end of the meal not going out of my way. I couldn't find them, but I also didn't go out of my way to go see them. And part of me was like, you know, fuck this lady. And the next morning on Twitter, I checked to see if something I had done the night before was on there. I was on some local news show I wanted to send to somebody, and this woman had written to me, and I got to read the word for word. She said, she misspelled it. She called me a douchebag, but you'll appreciate this. I got to read to you exactly what she wrote. Sorry, this is going to take a second. She said, first, she wrote me too, #Justin Long Justin Long, private party tonight. What a douchebag. Douchebag, she meant. Wore his PJs and could not be bothered. I wore a shirt because I didn't have a button-down shirt. And sent another one, #asshole. Ed Norton was an asshole to my friend Betty. Add Justin Long to the list. What a jerk. Work his war, she meant, his pajamas to a high-class party and disrespected us all. His grandmother should hit him upside his head. What a friggin' liar.
But basically what she wrote tells everybody what they need to know.
Yeah, well, as does, I then looked on Yelp. My friend found her Yelp account, and she's written 158 Yelp reviews. And I spent way too long reading these reviews. The detailed, they weren't friendly enough to me, and we waited 20 minutes. And
it's a mentally ill person.
Right, yeah.
Who's also a narcissist, obviously.
Huge narcissist. But, like, what I hate is that I had given her so much time, and
Well, by the way, you need to be friends with me.
Yeah,
I mean, we're friendly, we're acquaintances, which is a real word. Real word was like, you know somebody.
Yeah.
Like when you're an acquaintance, it's not a light word.
True.
You know, like you're an acquaintance. It's like friendship takes whatever, but I would teach you how to do that.
Well,
you could do my workshop.
I would love that because you talk about it in your stand-up, which is so good, by the way. It's called Our Man in Chicago, Jeff Garland. It's on Netflix. It's so good. But I think one of the reasons you're humor and you really appeal to me is because you get into certain situations, which is also why you're great on Curb, that I can completely relate to. And you talk about one, I won't like make you rehash your stories, though you're such a good storyteller and I'd like you to, but you get into an altercation which escalates with a woman
when I got arrested.
Oh, it made me laugh.
Yeah, it caught me by surprise. And like I say in the special, I thought I'm 50 years old. I go, watching Columbo and the guy get arrested. I go, and just randomly, I don't think I'm ever going to get arrested. And then lo and behold, a week later, I'm arrested.
Well, because you're at a certain age, we're like, what am I going to do to get arrested at this point? Yeah.
Well, by the way, also my nature.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? And I learned a lot from the experience.
It was a very relatable experience because
it could have happened to anyone.
Totally.
That's the point. And they also dropped the charges the next day. But nonetheless, it was horrifying. And it actually put the final stake in my marriage.
Yeah, you say that too, which is crazy. But it's a situation which sounds like sounds like it started in a more dramatic fashion, but it started in a way that I've been in so many situations similar to that, where somebody does something on the road. I mean, you're in your car, certainly in LA, and what always amazes me is when it's clearly somebody else's fault. I've been having this experience where people are texting. I always see people texting in the car, and I see them on the highway veering into my lane.
Yes.
So I give a little friendly, I mean, they talk about this on Curb, like a little like, pop, pop, like a little friendly, like, I'm not mad at you. I just want to let you know you're coming into my lane. And I've gotten stared, finger, fuck you, you know.
Yeah.
And for what? I'm trying to,
like. By the way, that's ego central. No, no, no. Ego's about having other people's opinions directly affect you in a deep way because you're so shallow with that.
Well, know? Which is what this woman in Florida did to me and which this woman in the parking lot did to you. Yeah. Is there a way to tell it? Because now I feel like people are hearing us talk about it.
No, Justin, there isn't. Yeah. See, I just set up boundaries with
you. Yeah, whoa, that's good.
I just set up boundaries. I could have gone, yeah, I'll tell this
story. Yeah, thanks.
And it's a bastardized version. Yeah, no one watches my special.
That's true.
I want every one of your listeners to watch my special.
That's true. That's smart.
And the story, you learn about life from the story.
That's true. That's
and you laugh at me, the appropriate person to laugh at. In my stories, I'm the stupid one. Yeah. I am low status, and that is the only way to be.
That's not necessarily true.
It is for comedy. Comedy, low status. If you're the fool,
right,
it's funny.
Right.
When you're the cool one, it ain't funny.
Yeah.
When you fail at the cool one, you're low status.
Yes.
Again, you know?
I remember, I remember Adam Sandler once, he said to me, he goes, I saw that movie you did, you know, he goes, yeah, buddy, your body looked like you were working out. And I did, I worked out for it. My vanity got the better of me. And he goes, you got to get a comedy body, buddy. And I said, what do you mean? He's like, you can't be like, have muscles and stuff. And
no one wants to laugh at that. You can be fit.
Yeah.
But you can't have.
Like muscle. Yeah.
You can't.
That's funny.
It just, it's there's a vulnerability that's lacking when you're too fit. So, and I told him I said this, so I don't want to act like I'm bad-mouthing the guy. But Dane Cook's arms are really fucking big. And I followed him recently in L.A., and I went up and I said to the audience, I go, I'm sorry, his arms are too big for comedy. It got the biggest laugh. He laughed when I told him it. You know, it's because it's
true, kind of.
It's true. You cannot. That's why Carrot Top has always been a weird one. I mean, you know, look, there's so many things going on in the character.
Oh, that's why he's been a weird one?
No, I mean, in terms of visually, the way his eyes are, and the body, which is so muscular.
Yeah.
It's strange.
It's distracting.
I met him. He's a very lovely dude.
Totally.
Nice man.
Yeah.
But I don't know him well, but visually, there's a lot going on there that I think is distracting. That's why I guess it doesn't distract from prop comedy, like big stuff like he does. But if he was telling stories, I don't know who could focus.
I know. I'd be hard to get past.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, going, what's going on?
Do you, You, speaking of physical transformations, you, since the last time I saw you, you've lost a considerable.
I've lost at least.
Well, I was going to say you got a haircut.
I've lost like 70 pounds.
I was going to say you lost a lot of hairs. You got a haircut. You must be sick of talking about your weight loss.
No, I'm not sick of it. It's just that I want to say for the record, I've not dieted on my weight loss. It was very slow. I just was more thoughtful with how I approach food.
Sugar,
and
right?
I stopped eating sugar, like sweets.
Yeah.
I mean, there's sugar in food sometimes. You don't know.
Oh, so you're not
And I'll eat fruit. But I'll even eat watermelons, you know.
Uh-huh.
I don't care. So, in terms of sweets, like it's been years since I've had a cookie or ice cream.
Oh, God. And ice cream is the thing that you said is yours.
Ice cream
that's
is
proof
like,
for the existence of God,
proof
you
the
say.
Existence of God.
Yeah.
You've had a bowl of chocolate chip. I don't see how you can say there is no God.
Yeah, it's funny. You know? I'm trying not to now rehash things in your special, but also I heard you on.
I don't care. It's all good. Yeah.
It is so good, but it's also.
Justin,
it really,
I'll go anywhere you go.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
But
yeah,
I'm
well,
not going to repeat the arrest story.
Okay.
I set my boundaries.
It's a tease.
And I'm not going to go say hello to your people.
Oh, good. All right.
So well, I don't. Her people?
Her people.
Yeah, that's disturbing.
I don't have any, so you're in luck. But I also heard you talk about this on Dax's podcast, and it's something that it's you also talk about on the special, and it was enlightening because I had never thought of. I never thought of food in terms of something that you could be addicted to.
Without a doubt.
And I know I've heard of, you know, I know people are, but I never heard it articulated in the way that makes sense.
Do you know how I lost my weight? I'm going to tell you the secret. I sit with my feelings.
Hmm.
When I feel something, I don't go for a candy bar, a cookie, ice cream. I don't. I sit with my feelings. And that has led to, because feelings are temporary.
Yeah.
They can be a few minutes. They can unfortunately be a week or so where you're just mixed up, but not much longer than that.
So when you, in the past, when you had a feeling, what about—
good or bad.
Oh, really?
Good or bad, I went for Oreos or whatever.
Yep. Oh, really? Like after sex, instead of a cigarette?
Oh, oh my God, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And it elevates your chemically?
I want it to numb me out, you know? I don't want to feel anything. Unfortunately, after a period of time, the food no longer does that. Oh. Just like, you know, anything stops.
Yeah.
It just stops working.
Well, because your threshold is so high? Is it because you're tolerant?
Yeah, well, there's that, but there's also, it just doesn't do the magic.
Yeah.
It's not magical anymore. It's just this, it just makes my body feel bad.
So when you miss it now, like when you talk about missing ice cream, is it purely the, I mean, obviously, is it just the taste? Is it the sensation?
Ice cream is a sensation. Right. That's the point. Ice cream, it's a sensation. It's a taste. It's a feeling when you're done.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel bad to
that's true.
Ice cream, you know? No, I of course, have a strong memory of all of it. I just can't do it.
God.
And
But
that's the one I miss. Everyone asks, how do you do it? And I can do it, but there are times where I'm like, oh, ice cream.
Yeah.
That would be so cool.
Yeah.
I never pined for a cupcake, even though I loved cupcakes and all that stuff.
Even when you're around and when you see people eating.
Oh, it means nothing to me.
Really?
You could even be eating ice cream and I wouldn't necessarily pine for ice cream. It just happens sometimes.
Uh-huh.
I'm good with it. I go to a dinner party. They serve dessert. I don't eat dessert, but everyone eating dessert means nothing to me.
And you said it took about 2 weeks for that to
set
in.
2 weeks for the, yes, 2 weeks of hell.
Yeah.
And then it's cool, and then you just got to keep going.
So is it like any other addiction? I mean, like in the movies when they do the montage when they're getting off heroin and they're like.
Yeah, I would say it's a similar thing.
Wow.
I don't know the heroin, but it's pretty harrowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your, not to dwell on it, but what was your flavor? What was like the.
Oh, baby. So funny people ask me that.
Yeah.
And what have I told you? Vanilla, chocolate chip, which is vanilla with chocolate chips in it. But man, I love every ice cream. Mint chip, strawberry, chocolate, you know, Rocky Road. I loved ice cream, all of it. But my favorite is actually the simplest one, and not French vanilla, which I enjoyed.
With the little
regular
beans.
Vanilla.
Ah.
Yep, vanilla bean, if you will.
From a specific place, would you?
Well, no, I enjoyed any good ice cream.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Ralph's ice cream, you know, but that's not as good as. Even Haagen-Dazs or...
You're at Carvel?
Yeah, all of that, yes.
I used to work at a Carvel, and I developed lactose intolerance, I think, because I ate so much of it.
By the way, I had a friend who worked at Carvel, and I used to go there and fill up, you know, those chocolate chip thingies?
Sure, that you put in the cake.
I would mix them up. Yeah. I love Fudgy the Whale. I've had more...
Oh, Fudgy the Whale. That was the most disgusting voice on TV.
Tom Carvel.
Yeah.
Monday is Sunday.
Guess
Tuesday is Wednesday. No, I know, that's why he talked. But I got to tell you, I've had numerous, on my own, in one sitting, Fudgy the Whales. I've gone in a Carvel.
Wow.
And I would even say, oh, got a big party. And then I'd take it home. I would take home my Fudgy the Whale and eat it.
Yep. Oh, my, yep. In one sitting?
In one sitting, yep.
No oh, doubt. My
Fudgy
God.
The Whale. Yep.
And so, okay, after you're done, walk me through the sensation that you feel. What do you feel? Or like you said, you just
Well, by the way, as I talk about this in, also in the special in terms of when I would eat all those donuts.
The donuts.
Yeah.
But, RoboCop 3, you
yeah,
said.
36 donuts.
I was trying to remember, was that the Rip Torn RoboCop?
No.
Oh.
No, it was after.
Wait, but what you were saying when you were eating the donuts, you tell a story about eating like 36 donuts in the scene.
So, you know, but with me, what I discovered later on was I would start getting high. When I say high, like... in a daze, and then extraordinarily tired.
Oh, my God.
So I'd eat Fudgy the Whale and fall asleep.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, because I didn't have any anxiety or pain, I'd fall asleep. But then I wake up with way more anxiety than I had in the first place.
And self-loathing? I mean,
self-loathing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a partner of overeating. They're good friends.
God.
Yeah. No, it was tragic. But the thing about... sugar, unlike heroin, sugar, it's not a fast death. You don't see a lot of old fat guys.
Yeah.
That's the premise.
True. Yeah.
So at some point, it cuts your life.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, heroin, you can be perfect shape and be dead.
Yeah. Do you, And so now, do you have more of a clip? Do you notice a difference? I mean, just in general.
Oh, by the way, when you go off sugar, and I'm not talking about anybody, for me, though,
yeah.
It was like a couple things. The world is way clearer than when I'm eating sugar. And it's like someone energy-wise put a rocket up my ass.
Oh, I bet.
So I got tons of energy, and I see things clearer.
Now.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And have for a long time now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I started eating, I got on this regimen of eating just vegetable, this smoothies with just mostly vegetables, a little fruit in the morning, and it completely changed my life. I used to get, after breakfast, especially at work, my energy was just, I couldn't function. I mean, I could barely,
And then it changed.
Oh, completely. I mean, it really transformed my life.
Vegetables are pretty great.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not my delight in terms of I want to have vegetables, but what they do to you— It's delightful.
What now in terms of food, in terms of like a culinary treat, really?
I don't
like
have any culinary treats. Really? I don't look at it as a treat.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, I have pizza every now and again.
Yeah.
But none of it's a treat. If I look at it as a treat, then it's an addiction.
Oh, then interesting.
Then it's a problem.
Yeah.
Whereas I just use common sense, and if I have pizza, it has nothing to do with the next meal I'm going to have. If I have ice cream, forget next meal. I'm not even going to make it to the next meal. I'm going to have more ice cream and then have cookies.
Right.
It'll be over.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't smoke weed? You don't know weed?
I do smoke weed. I started at 50.
Wow.
Whoopi Goldberg. I did The View. She turned me on to how it could help me. I was talking to her about anxiety, lack of sleep.
Oh, you really want to calm down.
Yeah, I know. And she turned me on to Indica, which has been a lifesaver. But what I also noticed about me and smoking weed, I can go 2-3 months and not smoke any weed and not even think about it, like forget. So I know I don't have a problem.
But that's not as impressive to me as the fact that you can smoke weed and not crave some sort of snack.
Oh, no. Actually, it does not have that effect on me.
Wow. Amazing.
It does not have that effect on me. I only am hungry when I'm hungry.
Huh.
I can smoke all the weed I want and it doesn't affect how hungry I am.
Wow. God bless you.
As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over. Because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
You grew up in Chicago.
Yeah.
What did your parents do?
My dad had a family business, a plumbing supply.
Uh-huh.
And my mother was a mother, but early on she was studying to be an actress and she was an artist. She painted, yeah.
So she had aspirations.
Yes, and she gave it all up when she had my brother and I.
My mom's similar.
She lived vicariously through me, my mother.
She did. So was she encouraging of you when you said you wanted to get into it?
Yes and no.
Because you were young.
I'm very confused. But it's also, look, being a comedian, if you said in 1940 to your parents, you're going to be a comedian, they're like, right. Oh, go do whatever. 1980s, you're a Jew. What, you're not going to be a lawyer? Uh-huh. You're not going to be a doctor? What the hell? Something's wrong.
Yeah.
If you want to be a comedian.
Yeah.
But yet I was the funniest kid in school my whole life. It's what I was meant to do and wanted to do.
And they recognized that, I'm sure. Your parents...
No. Oh. I got a... here's what they wanted. They both wanted me to have something to fall back on.
Right.
That was a big deal to them.
I bet.
Have to have something to fall back on. And I got to tell you, when you have something to fall back on, you're probably going to fall back on it.
Yeah.
Because it gets difficult. The only thing that I would recommend anyone to fall back on is an education.
Yeah.
Because then you're a smart, well-rounded person. And I wish I would have gotten a liberal arts degree. But I quit and focused completely on comedy.
Well, especially for what you do, made you, you know, known is you need to be sharp. You need to be quick in order to...
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
To respond to somebody like Larry David. I love what you said too. People coming up to you and saying, you had asked Larry, you said, how many times has somebody come up to you and said?
Yeah, because everyone comes up to me and goes, what's Larry David really like? And one day I said to him, I go, I'm going to ask you, has anyone ever come up to you and said, what's Jeff Garlin really like? He goes, no, never happened. Never.
Well, that's what I love so much about your special and about because I don't know you well. I've been around you just a little bit, but your special was so enlightening, and that I got to know this person that I only really knew through the lens of Larry. You know,
but my special really shows people who I am.
Yeah,
when you're done watching, you know who I am.
It's great.
I feel.
And it's,
I hope.
Absolutely. And it's somebody that I really enjoyed hanging out with for that hour and wasn't as familiar as I thought I was. You know, I'm sure people come up to you and think they know you. And,
well, of course, you get that.
Of course,
But so it's all okay.
Yeah. We had J.B. Smoove on, and I had a similar revelation about him. I was like, oh, this is a different person. I only know him through.
He is the best guy ever.
The best.
I love him.
And again, like, fucking quick. I mean,
I love him so much.
And a similar sense of, I asked him about his audition process for Curb, and I would ask you the same thing. Was there, how were you nervous to interact with Larry? You knew him, I think, better than JB did.
The show, I conceived the show and I approached Larry.
Oh, right.
So it was his idea to have me play his manager. And then he just, I went with an idea to Larry, to Larry David, and he ran with it.
Oh, my God.
I went to a genius and went, here, I got this idea. And the genius said, all right, I got it.
Wow.
Yeah, boom. And but JB's audition, I was in the room.
Oh, you were?
I was in the room when he auditioned, and he came in a day early from when we were looking at for his part.
Oh, he didn't say that.
And he was so great that we canceled a lot of auditions. We kept a few that we couldn't cancel.
Yeah.
But he was amazing.
Wow.
It was clear.
Well, he had said, I said, well, you must have been nervous. No. Wait. I knew it was mine. I knew, you know.
No, he wasn't nervous at all.
It's amazing.
It was, but when it's meant to be, it's meant to be.
Yeah.
It just is, and it was meant to be.
So I'm fascinated by that because I think I have so, especially people I respect, and I know he respected Larry in the show going in, so the fact that he wouldn't, and that's.
And it was only supposed to be on for a season.
Oh. Oh, the season where he takes in the family? Yeah.
They're called the Blacks. Yes. And he was just so damn funny, and he wasn't going to keep the Black family as a story. He was going to marry and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So the Black family went
leave.
On their way, and Leon stayed living with Larry.
Yeah, I love that they don't—
To have Leon as a roommate is hilarious.
Oh. And I love that they don't really explain it any more than, like, aren't you going? And he's like, no, man, I'm staying here. And he's like, oh, okay, well, there's that kind of...
Don't need it. It's not necessary.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
You lived in Florida throughout high school.
I'm from Chicago. We moved to Florida when I was in sixth grade, and then I left Florida at 22 to move to Chicago to do Second City and stand up. I started in comedy in Florida.
Okay, so you did. You referenced the movie Spring Break.
Yeah, which was when I was in Florida.
I
shot that there when I was 19. I went in to be in this movie. Yeah.
And you talk about belly flopping. So was that when you got a movie like that? I mean, they were making a lot of movies like that in the 80s, right?
Yeah. That was the day of, like, you know, the
One Crazy Summer.
Delivery Boy. Yeah. Yeah. All that thing. Yeah.
Yeah. What did you feel like when you got that? Well, your parents certainly must have felt like, oh, this, he's in a movie.
No, because I was, here's the thing. Back then in Florida, if you had an agent, you paid your agent like $25 registration fee, absurd shit.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, every year, another $25, whatever. They told me, that I had a part in this movie, Spring Break. I show up, I'm an extra. Well, someone, the director, points at me and goes, I want him to do this belly flop thing. And so I do this thing, but they still didn't give me any lines. I have no lines. Oh. I have close-ups.
Oh, wow.
I growl. I smash beer cans in my head. I shoot a moon. And I do these belly flops. And I really did my own belly flops, which is only a 20-year-old goes, yeah, let's, or 19 says, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah.
But I begged them. I really was like, why don't you have me do some lines? Like, give me, make my part something, you know? And they, no, no. Then the DVD comes out, and I'm the only person that they talk about. In
That's
the
so funny.
Yeah, because I went on to yeah. have a successful
Was there anybody else in the movie that continued?
A lot of working actors, yeah. but nobody was really working that much anymore.
That's
so very
funny.
Nice people.
And so then...
And by the way, the lead actors, the two fellas, the sweet guys, I cannot remember their names. They're really nice guys. They remembered me as an extra in the movie. How often do you remember extras?
Yeah.
I developed like a nice thing with them. They really, they could have. I'm not going to say they should have. They could have really done something with me.
Yeah, what's funny is they could have, yeah.
And they didn't. But the idea that they used me to market the movie when it comes out on DVD, I found hilarious.
That's funny. That and also the fact that now knowing how sharp and a comedic brain you have, an instinct that you have to just use you as a physical piece
of
comedy.
Yeah, that's all it was.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
So when you go back to Chicago, it's like, this is what, now I know what my, I know what I want to pursue fully.
I knew when I was, and I'm not making this up.
Yeah.
I knew when I was a little kid. When I was 8 years old, my parents went to see Jimmy Durante.
Ha-cha-cha-cha.
You know, okay. Yeah. So they took me to see him perform.
Wow.
After the show, on the way home, I asked my parents, is that a job? They said, yes. I said, that's the job that I want. I was 8.
And what did they say? Do you remember?
They chuckled.
Yeah,
come
yeah.
on, man. Kids yeah. say things.
Yeah.
But I knew I was the funniest kid in school, and I knew it's what I wanted to do.
Huh.
I knew for sure when I saw the Blues Brothers.
Oh, okay.
Saturday Night Live had a big influence on me, the original, for sure. But then when I saw the Blues Brothers, I kept saying to people, I'm on a mission from God, you know?
Uh-huh.
And that was like, I was doing it. I was gonna be the next John Belushi.
Yeah, yeah. So Second City is where you go to do that.
Yeah,
I mean, that
exactly.
makes perfect sense.
And I was a huge SCTV fan.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. yeah. So...
And was that, and how long were you there? And was that where you?
I was there for a long time, on and off. Got fired, quit, all this stuff, you know, and was doing stand up at the same time.
Why fire? How fire?
You know, back then, the audience, it's really kind of an interesting thing. As I was developing, I'm a young man in my 20s, Second City, when I went out on stage with the ensemble, the audience loved me. And laughed at everything I said. Mm-hmm. However, my peers, not much respect.
Mm.
In stand-up, my peers respected me, and audiences were completely confused by me.
Oh, weird.
So I had that. It all came together eventually.
Yeah.
But as you're developing, it's kind of interesting. And so the people at Second City, nobody ever mixed them. So my Second City compadres would say, just go do stand-up. You don't need to be here.
Oh,
and
wow.
I didn't realize till later there was issues with probably my personality too, but just there was jealousy, there was different things.
Did
you
they
know?
Yeah, like usurping a scene? Did they feel like you were dominating
certainly,
scenes?
Yeah, they definitely did. And what's fun for me is all the people who were mean to me at Second City I hired as actors on Curb.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of great. I was talking about,
by the way, the
letting go
revenge,
of ego.
The greatest revenge is to be kind and thoughtful
yeah.
to people who weren't that way to you.
Yes.
Like there's
yes.
people in the stand-up world who were crappy to me when I was a young comedian, and I'm only extraordinarily nice to them. The joy in it is that everyone thinks that you forget.
Yeah.
Don't forget, but that's I don't hold the bitterness, man. It's all gone.
You just reprocess it.
Reprocess it into kindness.
God, well, that means next time I go to Florida, I got to invite Lorraine out to the
you
Twitter
do.
Lady out to dinner.
By Denver. The way, I grew up in Plantation, Florida. That's where I started comedy in Fort Lauderdale. I had a movie play at the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival.
Oh.
I couldn't go. This is years ago.
Huh.
I want someone to eat cheese with.
Uh-huh.
But yeah.
That's right.
South Florida's got some winners. No, they really do.
Yeah. And, I like it a lot.
When I was a kid, like literally a little kid in South Florida, it was, sleepy, alligators, beaches. It was
palmetto bug.
Palmetto bug, but it was not built up. And what I always say about Los Angeles you know, because it's warm and South Florida's warm. At least when people come to LA, they come with a dream. South Florida, they basically go there just to get rid of bad weather.
Right.
So you've got people without
dreams. Just stagnant. Just stagnating. Yeah, just
people that you don't want to meet.
Yeah. It's interesting.
So well, that's what I love go about down there very much. I don't anymore.
Well, it must and have changed I quite a bit.
And it did. It's been a long time since I've been, and I hesitate to even think about how it must be changed.
Are your folks still there?
My parents are both dead. Thank you. Oh. What kind of fucking show is this?
Sorry, no, you're mine. No, I didn't know that. Why did I say that?
No.
My mom died, Jeff.
My mom died a couple of years ago, and my dad died a few years before that. And it happens.
I'm sorry.
By the way, in 1 year. My mom died, I got divorced, and my dogs died.
That's right.
Yeah, I talked about that in the special.
You do. Which I just saw, and I just asked you that question.
Don't worry about it, man.
Well, it's so ripe for comedy, that, but it probably is.
Oh, it all is.
Yeah.
Everything life is. Yeah. The only thing I wrote about my parents' death was, not as much about my dad, but my mother, that I don't ever want to see her ghost. I don't want to, like, contact her. Like, how people, like, have seances.
You know, I think about that. My parents are alive, but I think about that.
Well, I don't want her. I saw how many bananas you ate yesterday. You don't need that many. One or two. You had three bananas. Yeah. And you know, my mom hated bananas.
Why?
I don't know what happened, whether it was a penis or whether it was a duty. I don't know what it is about a banana. She hated, I swear to God, bananas. This was it. And my children, who got to know my mom well, she hated, I swear, growing up, bananas. She rarely had bananas in the house. She hated Frankenstein's monster. She was terrified of Frankenstein. And are you ready for this? This is the best one of the three. Johnny Cash, who I couldn't love more. At least she was alive. I told her, how did you eliminate Johnny Cash from my life? I love that man.
She hated his music,
his persona, the Man in Black, because she liked Sound of Music and that shit.
Uh-huh.
So Johnny Cash represented the opposite. Well, so I used to do things like when I borrowed her car, get a Johnny Cash cassette. Uh-huh. And when she got in, it was Ring of Fire, you know. And, but my boys would go, Grandma, how's Frankenstein? Like, they had fun.
They'd play it up, yeah.
Yeah, and she, God bless her, she'd laugh.
Grandma, you want a banana?
Yeah.
That's such a funny combination of three. And was she cynical? Was she a malcontent about other things?
No.
Like, that's so funny.
No, those are the three things. She didn't like when people weren't nice. He's not a nice person.
Yeah. And she was.
She also had a thing about the New Yorkers come down here. Oh, yes. But, you know, and so
but she's from Chicago,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't, you know, in South Florida, I didn't understand what she meant. You know, some New Yorkers, there's a bit of a personality.
Yeah.
But me, I've lived in New York. New York is one of my favorite places on earth.
People probably mistake you for a New Yorker.
But all the time.
Yeah, I bet.
All the time. For me also to not only have prejudice against Johnny Cash, but to think that New Yorkers are jerks.
Right.
It was like, what? They're not, you know, learning these things later on. Like, why did you do this?
Yeah. It'd be funny. It's true. And now, and her seeing, well, you couldn't listen to Johnny Cash or eat bananas. Right. But also, like, I think about that with ghosts sometimes, you know, and also them observing any kind of sexual behavior. I believe in ghosts. You do?
Oh, yeah. I believe in all that stuff.
Fascinated by it. I am. I love going on the ghost tours.
And I've come across ghosts.
Really?
Best one was probably the funniest one. Oh, no, many ghosts. I have ghost stories.
This is my next question. Who was the funniest ghost you met?
Oh, but anyhow, so I'm doing a movie in Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And first day of filming, I'm in my room, going to sleep, tired. But I'm reading, I think it was a comic book. You know, my head on my pillow, light, you know, and then reading my comic book. And all of a sudden, the covers come off my feet in bed. And I look up, like, for a fan. I'm like, well, how did that just happen? Like, okay, whatever. I cover my feet. A minute later, whoosh, off my feet.
No wind from anywhere.
Yeah, and I just burst out laughing. And I go, are you kidding me? Because it clearly wasn't. It didn't feel. And I said, all right, I'll keep them off my feet. Just can I read and then go to bed?
So
I keep my feet. And I did. So the next morning, I go down to the front desk and I go, I got to ask you, is this hotel haunted? And they said, room, ba-da-ba-da is. And I go, that's my room. I go, who wants it? This lady? She sometimes is seen in the hallway.
She used to have a foot fetish.
Yeah, I don't know if she, but I don't know what it was. But yeah, it was. And I've read about it online.
No
since then.
Shit.
Yeah.
And that, and it didn't scare you? When you didn't
no,
get a
because
shiver?
It was so absurd.
Right.
It wasn't like a feeling of cold or violence.
Yeah.
There was nothing
it's not
fearful
some
about it.
Spirit.
It was hilarious,
right.
I found.
The ghost
and
of Jimmy Durante.
I believe in ghosts and I'm cool with ghosts. You know what I mean?
And maybe
I
they
know
that.
Evil things in the world that I don't want to mess with. But most ghosts, I think, are just hanging out.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do-do-do-do-shaboom.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled BABBEL.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply. If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up we'll meet again.
So in terms of the afterlife, you believe that, like, oh, there's a realm, there's a world.
By the way, you're taking it a step further.
Uh-oh.
I have no clue. I have no clue as to what the afterlife, how many people become ghosts, who's a friendly ghost, who's not. I don't know. I don't have any opinions about any of that. But I do think that there is something.
Okay. Well, that's more than a lot of people, you know. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And you believe in ice cream and sex. So
I believe, as you say. I believe heartily in ice cream.
There's
got to
be a God.
Ice cream has stopped. But as long as sex doesn't stop, I'm okay.
Yeah. God, that's – I'm jealous of you. I wish – I'm fascinated by the idea of ghosts, and I would love an interaction with one. You talk about it in the special some really bad gigs that you had. I mean, yours
– Well, the thing is – when I look back on it, they depressed me. They made me sad when I'd bomb or bad things happen to me. But I look back and it was all adversity. It was all part of the journey.
And they're great stories.
Talk about. They're amazing stories.
Yeah. Did you ever think about, were there moments though, I was thinking this, listening to them, did you ever think about quitting? I mean, was it, did it get that bad?
I thought about quitting many times.
Huh.
Many times. But I had no choice. I had nothing to fall back on.
Yeah.
And I just kept moving forward. But by the way, not in those bad gigs where I was like, oh, this will make a great story. But when I got arrested, I truly thought to myself, well, let's see what happens because this is a story.
Oh, yeah.
This is a story.
Yeah.
And also, I made it work out when I went. The charges were dropped against me, but I can't like give the details, but I can tell you there was a civil suit brought about me.
Oh, my God.
Believe me, I know. But it was all once she found out who I was. Point being is, it's fine. But I had to pay her some money. You know, I knew I was going to. And I really wasn't upset.
Well,
I wasn't upset. But listen to this.
Yeah.
Part of the deal was when she signed the accepting of the money and the terms, that I could do it in my stand-up.
Oh, that's just great.
I couldn't name her, and I don't never knew
Why
her name.
Why should you?
But I also can't say where she's from.
So your idea, it was your idea. You brought the idea to Larry for Curb. How did you know Larry before that?
Just we were both comedians. Yes, I knew him. And also I was writing with Alan Zweibel, who's a great writer.
Yeah.
And Billy Crystal was there.
So wrote Ghost World, right?
Alan Zweibel, he created It's Gary Shandling Show.
Oh, God.
And he wrote all of Gilda Radner's stuff for...
When you were falling in love with SNL.
Yeah, that's really cool. Exactly. And he was a writer on the show then.
Wow.
And I love Alan Zweibel. He's a great man. But he shared an office with Billy Crystal and Larry David. And Larry and I would talk every day.
Wow.
About our kids and different things. And we were acquaintances. And he asked me to lunch one day. And he and I went to lunch. And at lunch, I said, you know, if you ever want to do a special, here's an idea I have. And HBO had approached him. And then we went to pitch it to HBO, Ari Emanuel, Larry David, myself, to Chris Albrecht. And Chris Albrecht said the words, how can I not do this?
Oh, yeah.
Well, are you kidding me?
Smart.
How can I not do this?
Yeah.
Then the first day of filming, you know, Larry and I, as we prepared the show, realized that we had this weird, we've been comedy partners for a long time. There was this weird connection.
Yeah.
Like, chemistry. And so first day of filming, he said to me, oh, what if we did this as a series? Because it was
a one-off.
It was a one-off. And my thought process was, I'll be on Larry David's next series. Yeah, little did I know.
So, Jesus Christ. This was 20 years ago.
This is
crazy.
20 years ago.
How much of that then is you just, when he had that idea, hey, we should do this, how much of it was you just being, I know all acting is just being present, but how much of it was just being there versus playing some part, playing the role of a manager?
I don't look at it as I play the part. Yeah. I know what the scene's about and I just do it.
But
which
is what all acting should be.
Everyone approaches it differently. For example, I'm not a good enough actor to rise above bad material. I know that about myself. Mm. Whereas like Ed Norton, who you mentioned.
Yeah.
Ed Norton
my
is,
fellow asshole.
Okay, no, but Ed Norton is you give him anything, and Ed Norton's fucking great.
Right,
Ed Norton is a spectacular actor.
Right.
I am not. I am as good as the material I've been given.
It's funny. I was just talking about this with my brother because we're both fascinated by Hallmark Christmas movies. We love Lifetime.
I know. By the way, my friend Steve is obsessed with them too.
Yeah, they're the best. But I always wonder, like, God, if I had a script like that, would I be able to? Could I do it and make it natural? I that would be a real test.
By the way. That so would be like I was a villain on Baywatch once.
Ugh.
And I say it's my best acting and worst acting.
Yeah.
Because A, I'm not good enough to rise above bad material, as I said. However, I had scenes with David Hasselhoff. I was the villain. And he was yelling at me as Mitch, you know, the character. And I didn't laugh. Uh-huh. Good acting.
Good for you.
Amazing. So it was the best and worst acting, yes. But it would be a good test. You in a Hallmark movie. Coming off as natural, that's a good test for you.
True.
It's a good test for you.
It'd be like fun. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, yeah, totally fun. But also, you could possibly suck up the joint, which would fit in with the show.
Totally, yeah. Either way, you win.
Either way, you win.
One more question, then I got to go to a speed round because I know you have to go, which sucks because this is so fun.
Oh, it's an honor, man. Thank you.
Mine. It's my honor.
And by the way, for people who don't know, we did do a movie together, Strange Wilderness.
My brother and I are going to talk about that, but my memories of it and you are just loving being around you.
We had a great time.
That whole set.
But by the way, that's the way I approach everything I do with joy. You know, and I was happy for those guys getting that movie made.
Other SNL writers, Fred Wolf.
So, and also the feeling of like, this is so fun.
Yeah, it's just so stupid. And
Your
outtakes are great. That's right. There's nothing that the happiest I am, I think, is when I'm watching outtakes, really fun outtakes. And you can see somebody's joy in doing the thing.
Oh, he's at a ball.
Yours are great.
And Steve Zahn might be the most talented man on earth.
I agree.
Talk about an actor who can rise above bad material.
Yes.
Well, I remember doing
that movie's
Daddy
an example.
But I was in Daddy Daycare with him. And I remember doing off-camera work and getting so lost in his performance that I would forget to say my lines.
I believe that.
I was like, wow, you are amazing.
Anyone who wants to see great comedic acting, Safeman, is one of the best.
Safeman, out of sight.
Out of sight.
He's amazing.
How about this? Riding in Cars with Boys, he should have He should have won an Oscar for that.
Well, by the way, he will.
He will, yeah.
Someday. He's so good.
And he's the nicest.
He's a lovely guy, yeah.
What a great movie. Last question before we get into our speed round. How do you go – I've been so curious about this. How do you go from having all the freedom that you have on Curb, and everyone kind of knows how that show works. It's just very improv-oriented, and there's a skeleton for the scenes. How do you go from that – to doing a scripted show like The Goldbergs?
There's a term like The Goldbergs.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is sometimes you'll do a scripted show and it's the fucking Sopranos. And like, right. you know, as Paddy Chayefsky wrote something, you go, I'm going to say but I learned my lines thoroughly. They want me to on The Goldbergs. I got to say, I'm going to use a word, stifling. It's very stifling.
I bet.
But I've given, it's all good.
Yeah.
It was very hard at first. Now it's much easier.
What do you attribute that to?
Just understanding the work. Uh-huh. And my job is to be, as an actor, I'm a storyteller.
Yeah.
My job is to tell the story they want. So it's my job to do The Goldbergs the way it's supposed to be done.
I see. Yeah.
As opposed to, Goldbergs is more about craft and Curb is more about the art.
I see.
I have to resort to my craft to figure out how to. By the way, I'm of the Spencer Tracy School of Acting. Know your lines and don't bump into the furniture. That's totally my approach. And I just do it, you know? And so that's what I do. But there is also I got to figure out how to do this scene besides learning my lines and just saying it. To, you know, make sure to tell their story. Yeah.
But I understand the stifling element, knowing that you have such a comedic gift.
Well, Curb is the opposite of stifling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so joyful.
Okay, short questions. What is your most commonly used emoji when you text, if you use them?
I don't actually. My friend Liz does... she always uses the woman with the hands up, like, I don't know.
Oh.
Not big vagina, like you're saying. No.
Big vagina.
Like, who's to say?
Yeah.
I don't. She, as her daughter and I laugh, she just uses the fuck out of it. But in terms of me, I don't have one that I go to.
Okay.
I have this emoji where it's sort of like a little cartoony me with a Cubs hat.
Oh.
It's called Cubs hat.
Yeah.
And it just depends on the situation.
Okay.
You know, blowing hearts.
Yeah, I like the blowing
jumping hearts. Up and down, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's so funny. I thought.
But I have no overused emoji.
Okay. Yeah. All right. If you could be a professional athlete, you played...
I played all sports.
What would you play if you could be a
if pro? I could be like in my prime professional athlete, I would want to be a baseball player.
For the Cubs.
Yeah, for the Cubs, for sure.
Like Sammy Sosa.
Like Sammy Sosa.
Just kidding. If you could have one snack. Oh, well, I think I know this. Now your snack food. Do you have a snack food that you can go to?
Not really.
Oh, sorry.
By the way, I love a delicious apple.
Okay,
nice Fuji apple, nice apple crisp, honey crisp. I mean, yeah, I love apples.
Dried
apples. I don't eat dried apples because generally I have
a lot of sugar.
Too concentrated sugar, yep.
What's your favorite movie of all time?
Boy, that's a tough one. I would get it. It's between It's a Wonderful Life and Sullivan's Travels.
I've never seen Sullivan's Travels, I want to.
Very important movie.
Okay.
Preston Sturges.
Okay.
It's a masterpiece. It's a movie that goes between drama, regular comedy, and broad comedy.
Oh,
and
great.
It works. It's remarkable.
Wow, screwball.
And it's a screwball comedy, but it's got a great message. Yeah, I'd say those two movies.
So, Jeff, you got me thinking about Spencer Tracy now, and one of my great delights in watching the movies, like those Hallmark movies, and movies, and I've done it myself, I'm really bad at it, is seeing actors look for their marks, you know?
Right.
And Spencer Tracy apparently was a master at doing that. He would always incorporate it into a gesture. You know,
he was natural.
Yeah.
Don't bump into the furniture.
Yeah, I like
know
that.
Where your mark is.
I like that.
And by the way, marks are difficult sometimes.
Total. Oh, fuck. I catch myself all the time.
Here's what I can tell you.
Yeah.
Here's what I do now. I look at the mark when I'm, you know, the rehearsal, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I reconfirm the mark.
Yeah.
Then I forget about it. And you know what happens? 90% of the time I hit my mark. And when I don't, they go, oh, you missed your mark. Okay.
Yeah.
And I go, where is it? And then the next time you're going to get it anyhow because they're showing you again.
Yeah, it's true.
So I just forget about it. That's my approach to stand up and acting is to trust that I'm present.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, I would say your special is an example of that. I mean, it's a really glowing example of that. If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, whom you've never met, this might be a tough one.
And we can come back. I've never met.
Yeah.
Jeez. I'm naturally curious about everything.
Yeah.
But I don't have that list. I don't know.
If you could live somewhere else, where would it be besides you?
I would have met the Thelonious Monk.
Ah.
Would be one of the people I'd want to just be. I'd probably like a bunch of old blues or jazz musicians.
Yeah. Yeah. If you could live one other place aside from L.A.
Oh, I love L.A. One other place. I guess if I had to pick, I'd pick New York.
Okay. Who's your favorite Muppet?
Kermit.
Okay. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Hindsight.
I would have done this podcast.
No. It's like, imagine if any situation you're about to enter, you know the result.
Great, yeah.
Yeah, that's a superpower.
Yeah.
I have a superpower. Being funny is a super. I look at it as I tell my boys, use your humor for good, and it will never fail you.
With great comedic power.
Yes.
Comes great responsibility. If you could be one age for the rest of your life, physically, where you just feel like you could live that age.
How old am I right now? 57, 57.
Okay. That's a great answer. Yeah. Inspiring answer. If you could be reincarnated as a non-human animal, what would it be?
Non-human animal.
Yeah.
As an animal. You don't have to need to add non-human.
I know. That's true. It's redundant.
Yeah. So animal. If I could come back as an animal, I'd want to come back as... I don't know. Well, that's a mammal. I was going to say dolphin. I'd want to be something in the sea. I'd want to be a fish, which is not an animal.
If you were asked a redundant question, would you point out that it was redundant?
Always.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing personal against
you. Yeah, of
you.
Course.
I'm just adding that so you know to not do that every time. It's like, oh, I was doing that. It's like having a booger and no one tells you.
Ah, yeah.
Just like, hey, man, right there, I swear to
it's
God.
It's a mark of a real friend.
Well, genuine.
I told somebody I was doing a play in high school, and I said to one of the kids, I won't say his name, I said, you know, your breath is really... It's really pungent. It's really horrible. And he appreciated it. He started brushing his teeth before the thing. Oh, I couldn't stand it.
By the way, how many times, and you know, you pointed out something there, and it's not as much with adults with bad breath, although we do go back to high school and whatever, like not telling people. Mm-hmm. But more than anything, youth is cruel because kids will be cruel to one another, but no one's going to say to a kid, you know, that shirt that you keep wearing, it looks terrible and you smell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, there's a way to say that with compassion.
Well, with compassion. Yeah. By the way, anything can be said with compassion.
Yeah. I hate that you got to go, but if you were a ghost, if that happened to you, how would you use that? What would you do? Like if you were in that hotel room with a you.
By the way, first off, my ghost approach is this.
You'd be stereotypical.
I'd get away with it if it weren't for you damn kids. That's what I was
saying. Oh, you'd be like a Scooby-Doo ghost.
Scooby-Doo ghost, yeah. No, I don't know what my thing would be. I would leave people alone.
Yeah.
Or, by the way, I do have to say, if you're a ghost, pulling sheets off someone's feet is funny.
It is funny. Yeah. I would do that too. Yeah. The Beatles or Stones, Rolling Stones?
Boy, that's tough because it's different things, but I would say Beatles.
What would you want your epitaph to read? Do you think about that?
I don't ever think about that, and I don't talk about that.
Good. That's the right answer.
Funny.
Yeah.
Salon goes, how would you like to be remembered? I go, oh, so you have a death show for me? You know what I mean? That's like, they've got a whole collection at Salon of people saying how they want to be remembered, which they're going to use when any of those fuckers die. Totally. No, I don't
In memoriam.
That. I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah, well,
that's,
I'm
that's
happy.
That's my epitaph. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here, too. And that could apply if you are a ghost as well.
Happy ghost.
I'm so happy you're here. I was so good to see you again. I can't believe it's been so long. It's weird. I feel like—
Far too long, but you live here now.
I live here. Yeah. I'm going to be in L.A. But let's keep in touch because it's weird. I feel I watch Curb so often, and I eat multiple times. It's like hanging out with a friend, I think, that I feel like I'm around
you. Well, you know that I dig you. So I've made that apparent in our past connections.
You have.
Yeah. So, I'll hang out with you anytime.
I dig
so
you
make mark this.
Yeah.
when we became friends.
Okay.
On your podcast.
This is the...
We went from acquaintances to actual friends. Oh. And when you come to L.A., now we have to hang out.
Okay.
Now you have a responsibility.
Oh, great.
To get
now I'm home. Obligated.
You are?
Great.
We're friends. Well, I like... contact their friend when they're in town. Are you kidding
the
me?
The guilt has started already.
All right.
This is a good obligation. And it's the new Star Wars movie you're in.
I am, but it's been overplayed.
I'm not
going to
ask you about it.
No, I'm an extra.
I don't care.
I'm an extra.
Oh, really?
The pictures that are online are not real.
A belly flop?
I mean, there's no belly flop.
Okay.
But I was in 4 hours of makeup. JJ's a great friend of mine, and I love the guy. So I went and I spent
a week
there figuring out which day I'd even work. They didn't know. It was like last. And then I was 4 hours in makeup, becoming an alien. I'm the only alien in the scene I'm in. You'll know who I am.
That's amazing.
And there's two shots. They're both still in the movie.
Oh, your kids are going to get a kick out of it.
Yeah, everyone will. As a matter of fact, when we're off the air, I'm going to show you a picture.
Okay. Oh, great. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Thank you.
Awesome. And go watch Strange Wilderness again.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure you've already seen it.
Well, yeah, we smoke some weed and
yeah.
That's what it's for.
Swell, that happened.
It happened, and I, you know, when he was saying goodbye, he, first of all, the people that were with him were so nice. You can really tell somebody's true nature when, like, after the show, you know, when we stop recording, and he's just such a mensch. He's such a lovable, like, sweet guy, and he was so nice to the people that he, you know, his publicist and his assistant. But he said, I don't know if there's going to be an interesting story. He said, we got to hang out now, because we were talking about that in the interview. And he said, he gave me his number, or he called me. I gave him my number and he called me. And I didn't realize, afterwards I realized my phone was off, so I never got his number. So I never got to text him afterwards.
Oh my God.
What a terrible story.
No, right? That's a great story. That really sums up the interview.
All right. Well, what'd you think of it?
Did you end up getting his number?
Yeah, but I had to get it through the Wondery people.
Oof.
We should save that for opening story.
You talked about hugging him, and you're like, oh, it's so fun, nice to hug you.
Yeah.
And he seems like someone who would be a great hugger.
Oh.
Like someone fun to hug.
You know what, though?
Was he a good hugger?
Speaking of that, this actually might be worth telling, unlike the last thing I said. He when I did hug him, he's like a big bear of a guy. You know him physically, like what he looks like, and he brings you in, and I pretended, which I often do with like big people big exuberant people when I hug, when I get like bear hugged, I pretend to be like hurt, and I go, and I was like, so he hugs me, and I was like, oh my God, it was too convincing a performance, because he was like, he got nervous. He was like, oh my God, are you okay?
Oh my God.
Yeah, and then it got awkward.
Was he hugging harder than normal?
No. It was just like he was just bigger than me, and he enveloped me, and I just thought – I was so excited to see him. I was probably squeezing him harder than he was squeezing me. You know, Donald Faison's a really good hugger. I'd like a good hug. It's nice to be hugged.
Who
by –
Who doesn't like a good hug?
By a big guy. What does that say? Does that mean –
you're craving physical intimacy.
Oh, maybe.
Not necessarily sexual intimacy, but physical touch. I think everyone needs...
A good hug.
It's human touch.
Do you think
it's a very important thing.
Is that like an infantilization?
I think everything is an infantilization on some level. But I think adults, regardless of what it represents from their childhood, I think all people need physical contact.
Hmm.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Don't you always feel better when you have some sort of physical contact?
Yeah,
I'm not talking about sex.
No, I know, but you looked at me in a suggestive way. I mean, it depends on what the physical touch is. Obviously, certain physical touches.
Yeah, you don't want like a
much
sweaty
better.
Handshake from a stranger.
Yeah.
That's not a good physical touch.
That's true. Yeah.
He does seem like someone who'd be fun to touch, though.
He is. He's a good hugger.
Like, yeah. His voice sounds like... He was at a Justin Bieber concert and was screaming during the entire thing.
It's funny you picked Justin Bieber.
Well, isn't that the funniest thing to picture?
Yeah. That him like in a sea of like
or Destiny's
girls.
Child.
No, it's funnier of Justin Bieber just to see him around those tween girls. I bet guys like him who do. I'm sure there are guys who legitimately like Justin Bieber. Or let's say that like K-pop band or some band that is popular among mostly teenage girls, and they can't. Go. It must be frustrating for them because they might be, you know, seen as being like perverted or perverts. Yeah. Must be sad for those guys, that population of the Bieber fans.
But how many people do you think that represents?
Probably not many, but like I'm for the 7 or 8 of them out there, it's like, well, I can't. I'd love to go to the show.
You'd have to go in some sort of disguise, I guess.
What disguise? How could you disguise your adultness?
Well, not your adultness, but your specific adultness, who you are.
Yeah, but don't
you'd have to wear a, you know.
But then you'd look more like a pervert.
It would backfire. Yeah, but as long as you were an anonymous pervert, I think. You could do it comfortably.
Oh, that's true. Jeff Garland's famous, so if he went, it'd be like, no, that's true. Or would perverts not even go to a big...
Anonymous pervert is a good name for something.
Should be his next special. That's funny. And isn't it, speaking of a special, it's so interesting how he alludes to that incident that we talked about, that he wouldn't talk about with the car and the one who took a spot, how that set into motion all these like really drastic things in his life.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. He kind of, maybe he mentions it in the special, I think, but it didn't really dawn on me that like that resulted in his wife leaving.
It's a pretty crazy thing. I was thinking about this last night. Justin and I were watching an episode of Entourage last night.
Entourage.
And I know. Why did I say it like that? Entourage. Entourage. And
I guess you have to. It's a French word.
I know, but you don't have to overly French it.
Entourage with Adrien Grenier.
We were watching an episode where Ari...
Gerald Ferrara.
Ari's wife leaves him because he gets into this profanity-ridden tirade in public front of her at a restaurant.
So good. God, what a great scene.
The straw that breaks the camel's back, and she leaves him, and she's so humiliated.
Spoiler alert.
It reminded me of Jeff Garland, though, and how that incident with the woman in the parking lot where he gets arrested, that was the thing. That was the catalyst that ended his marriage. And it kind of makes sense because you think, especially if things are on shaky ground, I mean, not to analyze a relationship that I've never experienced between, but it makes sense that if they were already on some shaky ground, that a thing like that, like a public humiliation like would be the straw.
That's true. In fact, that's true.
It's really sad.
And he got arrested for it. I mean, it was a major thing.
He seems like he's bounced back, though, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
From that difficult year?
He seems really
centered. He's so buoyant.
Yeah, buoyant, but also, like, he just seems more free now. There seems, like, unfettered. Like, he's not burdened by something. There was something kind of slightly more desperate. I don't want to say – I don't know.
Well, you know, he seemed like that to me, but I thought – I thought it was only because I knew him in such a specific context with Curb, where it's like in the interview, he seemed like a slightly more toned down version of the guy he plays on Curb, which I was curious about how he would be, because I think that performance is so natural.
I do too.
And I don't think he's playing like a manager.
Exactly.
He's just playing himself.
Exactly.
But he seems like a calmer version of that character.
Well, yeah. So maybe
there's something to that.
I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong to assess him that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just so close to who he is. I think you're right.
I didn't know that he came up with the idea. Did you know that for Curb?
I knew that because I had heard him on Dax's podcast and I'd forgotten that.
It's pretty crazy.
I know. Yeah.
It's such a good idea, but obviously like... That one spot. Do you remember that with the first, the pilot?
Yes, it was them putting on a show for HBO.
Yeah, that's all it was. It was supposed to be a one-off special. But I guess that was his idea, but I guess he swooped into a executive producer credit.
Well, it makes sense because he has such an easy, and he talks about this, such an easy rapport with Larry David. I would imagine a lot of people around Larry in his orbit, or certainly like auditioning for that show would be a lot more nervous. I mean, that's why... Ted Danson's so good on it, and
Richard Lewis. Really confident people.
Confident people who know him, who, like, don't need anything from him, who, you know,
That's true.
And I guess Jeff was one of them.
And that's why I think the last season of Curb, it started to feel a little, like, a little different, because do you remember that they started having guest stars on
who would try to be funny.
Trying, like, to...
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure great, accomplished improv people.
Yeah.
But... You could tell the difference between someone who's
just
naturally knows him and is kind of living in the scene naturally versus someone who is coming in with a loaded gun trying to be funny.
And I can't imagine the pressure. That's why I think like younger actors who are able to just kind of be natural and not go for the jokes on that show were so impressive to me. Like Jillian Bell was really great on it, and Rob Hubel, and you know, where they're just kind of playing the intentions and not looking for the laugh.
But I think fear is a key thing, because that's why that's what stuck out to me about him in this interview, is that he mentions a few times that he is funny, for one thing, but he says it not in a braggy way. He says it like just as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, when I was 8 years old, I knew I wanted to be a comedian because I was always the funniest kid in class, and I was, you know, I made everyone laugh. And
yeah, there's no false modesty.
Exactly, but there's no fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in order to be really good on a show like that, great on a show like that, you need to be fearless. And in his special, I noticed that a lot of what's funny about the special is him just interacting with the audience and chit-chatting with people in the crowd. And there's a real ease and fearlessness to him that he's not – there's nothing performative about him.
Yeah,
and I think that's why he works so well on that show.
That's
because
true.
He is not at all trying to be funny.
Yeah, and it's not – you don't get the sense that like, oh, he's going to be upset if this joke doesn't work. Or
right.
Like this. He's just kind of like – is relaxed. Yeah, there's something very,
very
relaxed about him. That's why it was weird, speaking of Entourage, to see him when we were watching Entourage, he popped up on it. He's in an episode of, like, I think season 6 or 7. And I know him so well on Curb. And I know Entourage was HBO. We just sort of figured he's – and there are a lot of people playing themselves on Entourage. But he was playing a writer, a gay screenwriter.
Yeah.
And it was so strange. I mean, he was good on it. Very natural.
Yeah, it was strange that he wasn't playing himself, though.
But it was strange. And it was a small part. And it was a part that he did, like, well into the Curb Your Enthusiasm run. It was really through me. It was,
yeah.
It's really strange.
But he's kind of always himself. Mm-hmm. And he admits that. He's like, I'm just...
Yeah.
I'm as good as the material I'm given, and I don't... He's not going to elevate a shitty script. You know, he was saying that some actors are able to do that. They're able to take something that's... you know, more mediocre and rise above it somehow.
Yeah.
But he's like, I can't do that. He's like, I'm only as good as what's given to me. Ed Norton can do that.
I don't think he's giving himself enough credit for his acting skills.
He was talking about his how he lost all that weight.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an interesting way of putting it, where he said that he doesn't see... First of all, I think it's remarkable that he was able to do this.
I know.
When he was talking about eating like an entire Fudgy the Whale cakes and eating like 30 donuts at a time. It's amazing that someone who does that can just stop.
Yeah.
That must have been a really miserable couple of weeks. But he was saying that he doesn't see something like ice cream now as a treat.
Yes.
Because then
it opens the floodgates.
Yeah, because then that makes... That sort of shines the light. I forget how he puts it, but that kind of shines light on the fact that he's an addict.
Yeah,
and it's like this thing that he craves.
I know it's something I never really.
But the psychology of that is interesting. It's like I'm not going to give it that kind of
power.
Respect. Almost power.
Mm.
And another interesting thing when he was talking about,
you see it as something bad, as like contraband,
right.
For your body,
right? And it may that fact makes it more appealing in a way, because it's like, you know, you can't have it.
That's true.
And it makes you crave it more, probably.
That's
psychologically
true. Oh, that's so interesting. I once thought that of cigarettes. Like it'd be a treat to have a cigarette after.
Right, but then you have it.
And then
you're
like, ugh, what would I do?
You both would be disgusted by the cigarette. But he was saying that the idea of sitting in your feelings and just experiencing your feelings instead of eating away the feelings.
Yeah.
That's what he had to learn to do. So whether it's a good feeling or a bad feeling, and I never thought about it this way, where if you're trying to quit something, anything, any vice, the reason that vice exists is because you're using that vice to cover some feeling.
To control something.
To try to numb yourself on some level. And he was doing it with food, and he said he had to learn to kind of sit and exist with his feelings. And I think... it's interesting now. I think people do that all the time with their phones, with technology. That,
oh my God,
it's so rare now to just sit and feel things.
I know,
because now we have a million options, a million ways of.
I found myself
covering it.
If ever I have a moment of like boredom, or it may be related to even a moment of depression or melancholy, I go to my phone.
Right.
I go.
You
to
want that little serotonin bump?
Yeah. Christian and I did a satire, a satirical piece that you can see on our website, theothercabin.com, called "The Real Stephen Blatt," and it was about a kid who becomes obsessed with his phone and now art imitating life. I found myself like, ever since I got this fucking Instagram, I would in a moment of peace, I could just be sitting, I could be reading, I could be looking out the window and looking at a, you know.
I know. Everyone go follow Justin on Instagram. It's at Justin Long.
I'm cutting back, so.
You really put your foot in your mouth when you ask how his parents are.
Oh, even my
though he
God.
Talks about how they're both dead and special.
I know, and I
especially
just
you
seen
just
it.
Saw it.
I know. I know.
But he doesn't.
No. He doesn't hold it against me.
He doesn't hold it against you. Yeah. That's good.
In fact, he goes out of his way to not make me to make me feel comfortable about yes. my gaffe. My gaffe. Social gaffe.
It's I thought it was so funny that his mom hates three things. Hated three
oh, yeah.
things.
Oh, yeah.
Bananas, Frankenstein's Monster, and Johnny Cash.
Yes.
And I thought, if you polled the entire world
how many
and asked
people...
them that question, what are the three things you hate the most
would
in the
be
world?
Anybody?
I don't think there would be anybody else who hated those three things.
They're so random.
So random.
At least...
Bananas, yeah. I get each of them individually.
Me too. I also get Frankenstein and Johnny Cash. Like, they have similar vibes, potential. You could argue
you mean
that,
together?
No, like a person hating both those things.
I think I get that too. Yeah. I don't, but I get how you could hate Johnny Cash.
What's your order of like favorite to least favorite?
Of those three?
Yeah.
Huh. That's
if you,
a good question.
If you could have
okay,
eliminate them in your life.
Okay. I would do...
Can I guess what yours is?
Yeah.
I would say the best to worst.
Yeah.
Bananas, Johnny Cash, Frankenstein.
You're right.
Yeah.
You don't both have to think.
Wow. Well, and bananas, not because I love bananas.
No, me either.
But because bananas
they're so
come
useful.
Up. They're so useful.
Yeah.
And I love things like banana bread. And banana, you know, is a good thing in smoothies and stuff. And I love Johnny Cash's music.
I do too.
But
you
I
know,
could do without it.
I know.
And Frankenstein's Monster is a cool character, but I've seen it. And you know, I get it. I don't need to see it again.
Yeah, I mean, he just kind of lumbers around. He doesn't do that much great shit. But you know what would be tough to give up Johnny Cash? Maybe I didn't consider this in a karaoke context. Because
you do Johnny Cash.
I often go to Johnny Cash. I'd still have Neil
Such
Diamond.
Such a lazy karaoke
No, because
choice.
My voice has gotten deeper over the years. And
I know, but it's there's
I
not much of a performance
watch on
to it.
This heart of mine.
That, but with karaoke, you're supposed to do something lively and...
Well, I can make it lively. Oh, don't worry.
You think too much about your vocal quality in...
I hear the train a-coming.
God, terrible.
It's rolling round the bend.
Finally, he really clearly wanted to elevate your relationship from acquaintance to friend, and I really think you should.
I want to. In fact, I reached out to him on Instagram when I was wasting time.
It went down in the DMs?
Yeah, I DM'd him. Who sings that song? It goes down in the DM. Where did we hear that song?
I don't remember.
I don't hear it anymore. But he, yeah, he hasn't written back yet. But I have his number too. I got it. Like I told that scintillating story at the top of this outro, at the intro of this outro.
That was a killer. Do you want to read a letter?
Yes. You know, I also thought that Grandma. Do you know Grandma sent us that letter from one of our relatives about her episode last week? By the way, thank you for all the positive feedback. She's so like tickled and thrilled that people, and as are we, tickled. She's more tickled than we are.
Tickled is tickled an understatement. She's yeah. very excited by it.
Yeah.
She's exuberant, like the toast of her
condo
community,
complex.
Condo complex.
Yeah, but it's been such great feedback. Thank you guys for, you know, we can't answer them all, but I've heard some really nice ones on Instagram too, where it's brought up memories of other people's grandparents. And I hope it inspires people to ask more questions and try to learn about their grandma. We're so happy we did, just selfishly.
It also made me wish that we had more centenarian relatives because people really seem to respond to that.
Wait, is it centenarian or centurion? Centurion's a guard.
Centenarian, I think. Centenarian.
Oh, you know, I incorrectly wrote that on Instagram.
Oh, really? I think it's – I could be wrong. I thought it was centenarian.
I think you're right.
But yeah, thank you. That was she is so flattered that people have responded. I sent her a bunch of letters.
Oh,
reviews,
you did?
And yeah, she seemed to really love them.
Well, she sent us a letter. Speaking of letters, we're about to read one now. But she sent us one from a relative of ours who really appreciated, learned things about her that she didn't know, and learned things about her own mother who passed away that she didn't know. Anyway.
And maybe we'll have Grandma on again at some point.
Yes.
Or maybe she'll get her own podcast and put us out of business.
Yeah, she was so good.
So let's read this letter.
This is from Leslie L. Subject, well, Grandma Jody just happened. Dear Brothers Long, both of you were wondering so intently if your listeners would find the Grandma Jody episode interesting. She is your grandma, but not our grandma, right? Fret not. Not only was she interesting, she was fascinating and incredibly inspiring. Ah. Oh. I was decorating my house for Thanksgiving while listening, and her laughter, enthusiasm for life, and incredibly positive attitude put me in a festive holiday mood. Man. She is the embodiment of what really matters in life, loving family, sharing stories, and practicing gratitude. What an incredible woman your grandmother is. I feel bad reading this so fast, but I just want to... you guys are really lucky, and I know you won't mind how heavy that casket may end up being, LOL. Oh my God. That's funny. 2 days ago, I attended a beautiful yet emotionally gut-wrenching memorial for my dear friend who passed from cancer. Ugh, she was only 62. God. I've been in a bit of a funk since then. Hearing Grandma Jody speak so beautifully and succinctly at the age of 102 reminded me that not all the good die young and that longevity can prevail. And kudos to your other granny, too. This episode has inspired me to ask my elderly parents and family members to share more stories and memories with me. You know why? Because life is sometimes short, and other times it may be quite long. We just have no way of knowing. Either way, the family stories need to be told, heard, and shared. Thanks for this awesome episode. Keep up the great work what you're doing with your podcast. It's simply divine. That's funny. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours fondly, Leslie. I'm Leslie with no E at the end. God, is that nice. That so is nice. So nice to hear. And that is echoes a lot of, like we said, a lot of the sentiments that we have been hearing. And we're so grateful. And our grandmother is grateful that she has inspired people in any way. Even if it's to just invest in some of the older people in your life a little bit more and discover a little bit more about them. And I'm so sorry that your friend passed. We don't have enough time to – I wish I could ask you about why you don't have an E at the end of your name, Leslie.
The burning question.
Yeah.
Thanks, Leslie, and thanks for everyone for writing. Like Justin said, we've gotten so many – letters and reading them all, and I wish we could read them all out loud to you guys, but the show is not long enough. And if you want to write in,
yes,
our email is lifeisshort@wondery.com,
and that's it.
That's the show.
That's our show.
Thanks, Jeff Garland.
Thanks, Jeff Garland, and all the shorties out there.
And please convince Larry to not only never stop making Curb Your Enthusiasm, but if he wants to come on, that'd be cool too.
Yeah. We're not asking you to ask him because I know that must
no,
be
but enough. If you're listening.
If it comes up.
If it comes up. Organically in conversation.
And you know, there's a slight chance that Larry David's listening.
Slight.
Okay. But I'll take it.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
So this has been Life is Short. I'm your host, Justin Long, our producer of Life is Short. Wait, I forget how to do this.
Oh my God. Oh my God. It's produced by Christian Long and Megan Monaco. Our senior producer is Michelle.
Lance.
Mish. Nickname Mish.
Sorry.
Our audio engineer is Marcelino Viapondo.
Executive producers are Marsha Louie and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
See you next week.
Bye. Do birds get fat? Are there fat birds? Penguins might have fat. I don't know.
Can pigeons get fat?
I think I've seen a fat pigeon.
Like if pigeons found
like a tub of KFC.
Exactly. If they,
yeah.
You know, because pigeons can just kind of eat what they can find, and it's usually like
that's true. Scraps.
Scraps. But if somehow there
they
was
had
like
a bowl,
huge,
like a 10-piece bowl. Of,
oh my God! Yeah, or like a swimming pool full of food for them that they just had access to. Would they keep eating until? I mean, not until they die, but
until when?
Yeah. How much do those things eat? What animal eats until they die? Cats, right? Don't cats?
Do they?
I think cats don't know when to stop eating.
Really?
Yeah.
Because on the Serengeti, wild cats are, they have to,
they don't know when their next meal's, so they have to like eat a ton.
Oh, maybe.
Don't cats do that? Don't they eat like a massive amount, like anacondas?
They eat whatever's in front of them. Like they don't stop when they're full.
Right, right. Huh. There must be an evolutionary reason for that.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.